5 minutes after the 12 o'clock hour. Welcome back into the whole show, powered by PDC Energy. We're live from the Allo Communications studios. Thanks for being with us here today. Excited about our next guest joining us on our First Advantage Hotline, UNC Bears head women's volleyball coach Lindsay Oates. Lindsay, it's so fantastic to get you on. Year in, year out, you put together such an exciting program for this community. And according to the polls and everything, everyone's expecting you to do more of the same. Coach, thanks for being here with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. You get a tune-up game last week going up against Denver in an exhibition match. Coach, talk to us a little bit about that. You guys win 3-1 overall. What did you see in that match last week that kind of gets you set for your first regular season game of the year?
Yeah, I love that we can have an exhibition match. That rule changed for us just a couple years ago. So it was a good tune-up, as you called it. We played quite a few different lineups, as did they, so it was a good chance to see some of our freshmen. We have 7 freshmen on our roster, and see what role they could possibly play for us. We return a really veteran group, so we could probably put a starting lineup out there without those freshmen, but we want to see where they can help us upgrade a little bit and provide depth and where we can use them in some key situations. And so that was our best takeaway from the match, is getting to see those 7 freshmen.
Yeah, and how significant is that? Like you said, this is a relatively new thing, getting an exhibition game where maybe the pressure's off a little bit, but it also allows you to experiment, tool around. You know you have, 11 returning players from last year that made up such a wonderful team, but it's got to be nice for you to say, okay, we know what we have there. We need to tool around here just a bit and maybe see if there's some tweaks that could help us out throughout the course of the season.
Yeah, it is. You're not as worried about the win and loss, and that's important because you don't get that the rest of the year. Everything matters from here on out, and so you are willing to work through some things where you might not normally do that. And I think a great example was in the third set, as we were struggling a little bit. We had all kind of rookies in there in the front row, and we couldn't sight out, and I let them work through it instead of subbing our veterans back in. And we did end up losing the set, but that's a good learning experience, and you're way more willing to do that in an exhibition match than we would if that were, a conference match on the line.
We'll talk more about tomorrow night's game. As you said, this is the real deal. We're getting into the season tomorrow night as you guys get set to host UC Santa Barbara at 6 o'clock. But Coach, I got to talk to you about this. And once we talk about it once, we'll be done with it. We'll be in the season. But defending Big Sky champs, of course, going to a national tournament again for the 6th time. You guys have just been absolutely a thrill throughout the state. Really, we don't have a lot of consistently good teams we're talking about for as many years as you've done it. What's that like, constantly churning out these great teams and again, bringing 11 players back, but I know you have a lot of freshmen that you're excited about too.
Yeah, we do. We're excited about this group. As you said, with 11 returners that were able to experience that Big Sky Championship and the NCAA tournament and got a taste of it and want to go further this year, that's not enough, that we want to be advancing in the NCAA tournament. And some of those things you got to do once or twice before you really get the impact of it and the pressure of it and how to handle that a little bit better than we did last year in the tournament. And so for these players, for our seniors, this will be their third NCAA tournament if we can advance that far. And we were so close in 2019, close to knocking off Hawaii on their home court. So we're getting closer. We just need to take that next step. And so you build that, your freshmen learn it, and then they're put in that situation. And so I think that's been, one of our keys to success is that we're not relying on freshmen, because they're going to make freshmen mistakes, and we have to have some wiggle room for that they can go in a match and then come back out of a match when they're not quite ready, as opposed to needing freshmen to start.
We're talking to UNC head volleyball coach Lindsay Oates. And again, I love that because this is a fun process. It's got to be a fun process for you because you had all these young players that have grown up with this program, and now they set themselves up as leaders of this team so they can help really carry you throughout the course of the season. But these youngsters coming up, you know, you think you kind of know what to expect as you're scouting this group, but then as the season progresses where maybe you're not relying on them as much, they do come in maybe in some non-pressure situations where you go, all right, there we go. That might be perfect down the road.
Yeah, exactly. They're essentially their tests, and we want to see how they respond to different situations and so that we can trust them in those same situations with higher stakes later in the season.
Coach, obviously looking at the, I don't know if you pay, I'm sure you pay attention to the preseason polls. So some coaches say, yeah, I look at it for a second and then I go away from it. But again, not a big shocker here. You defending Big Sky champs, you've been picked to win the Big Sky again. What's your thought process there? Is there a sense of pressure that comes with that? Because coach, we throughout the state, we talk about UNC volleyball. People expect, it is what it is. They expect greatness from you guys every single year. Your team have set that tone every single season.
Yeah, it's a positive pressure. I think, I'll be quite honest, I would have been disappointed if we weren't preseason number one. And that's easier to handle than getting shocked of like, wow, they think they're better than maybe we think we are. That turns into pressure. But our team wants that. They want to be preseason number one. They want to be number one at the end. And that just means they've earned respect. And so I think it's always, like you said, a little bit more concerning if it's a surprise or if this is our first year in that situation. Yeah. Our veterans are comfortable with the target on our back, and so they won't shy away from that.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, you can look at it in a couple of different ways. Like you said, some teams can choose to kind of say, nah, we're not even going to talk about it, but it is what it is. There's a giant target. If you want to be the best, you have to beat the best. And looking at what you did last year in the Big Sky Conference, I mean, there's no question. There's a gigantic target on your back. So you know you're going to get that from every team that you face. Even teams that might be struggling, they know, wow, if we can put up a good performance against this team, that can really change our mentality for the rest of the year.
Absolutely. Yes. And you know, we do want everyone's best match. That's what's going to prepare us most for November and December. So, you know, it's scary in that regard because we could drop a couple matches, but the goal isn't to go undefeated. The goal is to win the Big Sky tournament and to be advancing in the NCAA tournament. So if those are good learning lessons in the meantime and we're getting everybody's best volleyball, then that's the best preparation we can ask for.
I know fans are excited about tomorrow night. As you said, this is the real deal now. We're jumping right into the season going up against UC Santa Barbara at 6 o'clock. Coach, tell us, give us some of your initial thoughts about this program and what we can expect tomorrow night.
Yeah, very, very solid program. They finished second in the Big West behind Hawaii last year. But beat Hawaii both times. They could have easily won that conference. They have a very high RPI, well-coached program. They're good every year, year in and year out. And so this is great to get them on our home court, a team of this caliber. And we follow that up Saturday night against North Carolina, also a very strong team at the top of the ACC. They're getting votes right now for the top 25. So two matches back-to-back this weekend that'll be really exciting, and it's great to get them on our home floor.
Yeah, no question. I mean, again, this is a great way to start the season off. Like you said, it's a busy weekend for this Bears volleyball team. And then you're turning around next week, going just not too far away, taking on Colorado State. So I know I've had you on the program, too, and we've talked about how much of a luxury, but almost how much of a battle it can be to have great volleyball at the high school level because, you know, you said, hey, they're in our own backyard. That's great. But that also means that everybody's gunning for these players, these sensational players throughout Northern Colorado, including the team up in Fort Collins and Colorado State. So it's kind of a double-edged sword for you on that side of it.
Yeah, CSU's been a great program for 20 years, and so they're reputable nationwide and are going to get good local recruits, they're going to get good national recruits, and we're trying to do the same thing. And so often we do go up against them in recruiting battles, and most often, it just depends on what's the best fit for that kid and how soon can she see the court, and what's the best major at that college, and some of those factors, because they have two good choices to choose from here in Northern Colorado.
Yeah, no doubt. It's a fun, for fans, it's kind of a fun battle to see who's going to get these great players and what that means. But again, at the end of the day, it means that volleyball is thriving, specifically in Northern Colorado. Coach, you tell me, how rare is it to return 11 players, but not just 11 players that were, these players were so big, so instrumental in that Big Sky Conference championship season. I mean, I can go on and on. Sid Cole, Maddie Davis, Mackenzie Harris. I mean, the list goes on as far as sensational players that make a huge difference. How rare is that to have that many important players return?
Yeah, it's a great thing for us. A lot of it is due to that COVID fifth year. Like a KJ Sure. Ince, for example, probably our most decorated player. And this is her fifth year, fifth season playing. She was not a true redshirt. She's getting that COVID redshirt year. So that's a huge luxury. But at the same time, our opponents are having the same thing. Everybody's a little bit more veteran than in a typical season 3 years ago. And we'll see that for two more seasons where we see a lot of fifth-year players. But Kinsey Harris from Eaton, was Big Sky Tournament MVP, and she returns on the outside as kind of co-partners with KJ there. Rachel Hickman was a first-team all-conference player. She's a transfer from Kansas, but this is her third year with us. So a lot of court experience, a lot of those pressure situations. She's been there, done that. And when you have your three pin hitters going to carry that big of a load, and as much as they've been in that starting role, that's super important.
Yeah.
Sid Cole set the last half of the season for us, so she has some starting experience under her belt, but our three pin hitters will carry a big load.
Well, it's exciting to see, and I know the fan base is just thrilled to see what you guys can do. And again, tomorrow night, getting this thing set off on the right foot, at least we hope, Coach. We wish you the best of luck, and hope to catch up with you very soon.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, there she is, head coach Lindsay Oates of the UNC volleyball team. I mean, listen, I know I don't talk a lot of volleyball in this program, but when we do, we know, hey, this volleyball team in UNC is very good. CSU is very good. Part of that is because of all the great talent surrounding the area. So very special stuff coming from Lindsay Oates' group, 11 returners that were significant for this team last year. So 17 minutes after the 12 o'clock hour, we're going to take a short break. We got the Lunch Rush coming up next, the top stories trending nationally in the sports world. It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy on Northern Colorado's Voice 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Get the insight you need before making that pick. Listen to Betting Across America with former Buff Mike Pritchard, weekdays at 2 on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Adam Matas with DNVR, the DNVR Bar, and the DNVR Nuggets podcast, and you're listening to The Whole Show with Brady Hall.
Lighthearted for your lunch rush today. We take a look around the sports world at some of the top stories trending nationally. And how about this one here? The NFL, this is from CBSSports.com. The NFL claims John Gruden sent derogatory emails during time as Raiders coach, per report. So more so than what we were already aware of, I guess. The development surfaced this week because there is a current lawsuit going on. The lawsuit, of course, between former Las Vegas Raiders head coach John Gruden, the one he filed against the NFL, and Commissioner Roger Goodell. Gruden alleges that the NFL and its commissioner created a malicious and orchestrated campaign to leak inappropriate emails sent by him between 2010 and 2018 before his time as the Raiders coach. But a filing made last week to a Nevada court, per the Washington Post, says that Gruden sent derogatory emails after signing on the dotted line with the Raiders in 2018. The quote says, Gruden even claims in his proposed order that it's undisputed that all of Gruden's conduct referenced by the NFL parties occurred prior to the signing of the agreement. And while Gruden was not an employee of the Raiders or the NFL, the league's attorney continued to write, Gruden's claim on the timing of his email is in reality very much disputed by the NFL parties and in fact false. Discovery necessary to make any finding of fact on the issue will show that Gruden continued to send the same kinds of derogatory emails consistently following his start date with the Raiders. Again, I'm not arguing about this. The story's not about Gruden, me arguing about Gruden or any of the emails and all that, but didn't they go in to investigate what was going on with Washington and Snyder and all that stuff, and then they found all the Gruden? And so was Gruden essentially the scapegoat in this whole deal?
This investigation needs an investigation of its own.
I think the NFL needs to hire an investigator to hire an investigator.
With a third-party person.
With a third-party person that can judge it, and then they can veto it, and then have a settlement of some sort.
And then get it back to Goodell's desk.
Yes, do that. This is a rough story here. Now, there was concerns about this, Angel. Oklahoma City Thunder rookie Chet Holmgren will miss the 2022-23 season because of an injury to his right foot, the Liz Frank injury. That's what they call it. The team announced on Thursday. Now, before he was drafted, Angel, there were a lot of people saying that Chet might not have the build to be like a long-term player in the league as far as looks like he might get hurt. Well, this isn't going to help those naysayers about Chet Holmgren. This sucks if you're the Thunder, because you got a guy you're wanting to build around. How do you handle this news? I mean, it sucked when Jamal Murray got hurt and Michael Porter Jr., but imagine drafting a guy knowing he's going to be the future of your organization and he's going to miss the first season right off the bat.
Yeah, that's tough. And a Liz Frank is not an easy injury to go through. It's basically a tendon in your foot that gets torn, and it's right above where your toe bone meets the rest of your foot bones.
Wow.
Very painful.
How does that even happen? How does that, I mean, any kind of foot injury happens when you're running and jumping and doing stuff, but is it a common injury? Do you hear about it a lot? I don't know that you hear about it an awful lot, but I was just curious. All right, moving on. Los Angeles Lakers finalized deal to acquire Patrick Beverley from the Utah Jazz. They just made the deal official yesterday, or actually this morning. It's official this morning. It was a yesterday move, but it's official this morning. Talen Horton-Tucker and forward Stanley Johnson will go to the Jazz in exchange for Patrick Beverley. Beverley tweeted on his Twitter account, woke up a Laker, 34 years old, returns to the Lakers after spending 17-21 with the Clippers. Is he, how do we view him now? Is this just another player that's good, but he's just kind of going into part of this, like, we're bringing all these guys that were better 5 years ago to join the Lakers?
Yeah, it seems like LA's stuck in this time machine almost, and they're just like, oh, look, we got Russell Westbrook, and we got all these old dudes that might have been good a few years ago, and now LeBron's just going to put them all together and go play and win a championship.
Yeah, it was whatever, I guess. The Lakers, are the Lakers going to be good? Are they going to be good this year? Are they a playoff team? Are they a deep playoff team? Where are you at on that?
I don't know enough about the Lakers. You can't count out LeBron. Obviously, the last couple years have been what they have been, but kind of feels like he's in the twilight of his career at this moment. And if he can get one more playoff push, that might be it for him.
Yeah, I mean, with LeBron, you just kind of, at some point, you just kind of look and go, when are we done with LeBron? And it's not that, because I'm the same way with Tom Brady. I don't want to be done with Tom Brady. LeBron is LeBron at that level anymore? Like, still a really, really good player. I mean, he might still be top five in the league right now. But when you're on a team that you keep track, because it's general manager LeBron. We all know LeBron's pulling the strings there. And then, of course, LeBron's kind of an annoying player. So it's a little, to me, it's different. Brady's not annoying. Some people would say it, but they're annoyed by Brady because he wins. People aren't annoyed by LeBron's winning. Maybe the whining. See what I did there? I don't know, man. I don't know. Anthony Davis, too, that's another one. It's like the guy is a freak of nature. And when he's on the floor, he is really good, but he can't stay healthy. That experiment has not worked.
It's made of popsicle sticks.
It seems like it, because everything that he does He's down. He's hurt. I mean, I get it. You're a big dude. Big dude. Big tree fall hard kind of thing. But he's hurt quite a bit. I'm just looking around at the rest of this roster, and I don't know what to make of it. I'm certainly not worried about the Lakers being a threat to step in front of the Nuggets. They're not one of those teams. They're not the Suns. They're not the Mavericks. They're not the Grizzlies. They're not the Warriors. I'm not worried about this Lakers team at this stage.
That's fair.
Yeah. All right, the Method Flow Products poll question of the day. Who's going to lose the AFC West? Who's going to be at the bottom of the barrel? Texter from the 970 says Tyreek will drop off in Miami. I just don't. I think there's no substitute for speed. And if you can catch, like I said at the start of the show, Angel, Jerry Jeudy has not proven he can catch on a consistent basis and make big-time receptions. Tyreek Hill can catch, and he's got the speed.
I'll say this about Tyreek. As good as he was in Kansas City, as good as he was with Travis Kelce, you never really had that other number two receiver, and he has that in Miami with Jaylen Waddle. Very similar body types, very similar attributes and traits, and the way that their offense is going to be schemed to get both of those guys open, using the other guy to get the other guy open. So, I mean, you may see a drop-off in receptions, but I don't think you're going to see his ability and his dynamic playmaking skills are not going to fade.
Yeah, I don't see it.
He's too good. He's too fast.
Again, the speed thing is huge for me in the NFL. If you have that speed, hot, nasty speed, as Ricky Bobby said, then that is a great... I mean, that thing, man, if you can run like Tyreek Hill does... Not just taking the top off of a defense, but if you take a top off of a defense, then they're also freaked out suddenly. Now they got to play a little bit underneath. Well, or they back up, whatever. Then you got it underneath. I mean, Tyreek can do both of those things. He controls every level as a wide receiver. You know, there's the big guys. You know, DeAndre Jordan, arguably the best receiver in the game right now. Devontae Adams. I have my Nuggets story pulled up still. Devontae Adams still, to me, sound-wise, is like the best receiver. Because I think he has the best hands. I think he has that ability to win those one-on-one battles. You're not getting that same of receiver necessarily with Tyreek. Not to say he hasn't won one-on-one battles. But his skill set, to me, is more terrifying.
Sure, and you can. It's not just, as I said earlier, it's not just go routes. You can even use him as a decoy.
Yeah.
Just, hey, go stand over there, and two DBs are going to go cover him.
I wonder how DeAndre Jordan would be as a wide receiver, though.
It's a big body. Maybe a tight end, maybe.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah, with Adams, don't get me wrong. The guy scares me, but he could be like the death by a thousand cuts kind of guy, where he's just getting catch after catch after catch. They're moving the chains, and again, that's terrible. But Tyreek Hill, along with Patrick Mahomes, I get it. Could get you in 14 seconds. 13 seconds. So that's what's, to me, that's what's scary. I look at Golden State and I think no 20-point lead is safe. So that's terrifying. They're always scaring me. Now I look at Kansas City, especially with Tyreek Hill, and I thought no lead is safe, no matter how much time's on the clock. Even if there's a second, I still think that there's a shot. Kansas City gets the ball down the field. And they get a pass interference call, or you get it to one of your studs, and they make a play. Do they have that lethal guy? Travis Kelce's going to wear you down. No question about it. But do they have the guy that you think everybody has to have an eyeball on that guy? Because he's going to either beat us deep, he's going to get a quick catch underneath, and then it's over. So I think that your Chiefs fans are like, oh, no, it's fine. Like, Angel, see if you could pull up, what were Tyreek's stats last year? I mean, I know they were good, but you're telling me that Juju Smith-Schuster, Valdez Scantling, and Mecole Hardman, that's going to replace it for you? Like, neither one of those guys has that ability that Tyreek Hill does. What was the numbers last year?
111 receptions
yeah.
on 159 targets. 1,239 yards, 11.2 yards per catch, 9 touchdowns, and a long of 75. That was just the regular season. In the postseason, he was 23 for 28, 285, and 3 touchdowns.
Okay, you just read off amazing numbers there. You tell me if this compares. 15 receptions for 129 yards, Again, he was hurt. Juju Smith-Schuster. Marquez Valdez-Scantling. 26 receptions, 430 yards, 3 touchdowns. Mecole Hardman. 59 receptions for 693 yards. Getting better. Doesn't even come close, though. And again, I know Hardman, you think, oh, he's going to get bigger numbers this year because Tyreek Hill's gone. Good luck. You're replacing a lot of productivity. Trying to replace a lot of productivity. And some might say, well, that just means Patrick Mahomes is going to have to spread it out even more. He's going to have to be more of a, I don't have my, Kelsey's going to be a stud. And again, I know the receptions, when you look at it, Kelsey had a lot too. I think he had probably the best numbers, arguably, as a tight end. He's almost at 100, 92 receptions for 1,100 yards. But you had two of those guys. Now you have one, and you have three guys trying to make up that production from one guy. Not to say they can't do it. I'm not saying Kansas City can't do it. I do believe in Patrick Mahomes. But to just flat out say the Tyreek Hill thing's not going to affect them a little bit is ignorant. It's stupid.
And we're forgetting that Andy Reid is also a very, very good coach.
And I get that, too. I'm just saying that, you know, and I don't know about their – I don't have their roster as good. You know, when I put together my best in the West, my position group rankings in the AFC West, going over pretty much the starters for each unit, essentially, on the Chiefs side of things, I don't have them – I have them fourth in cornerbacks. I have them fourth in safeties. I have them first in inside linebacker, but let's face it, inside linebacker is the weakest position in the AFC West. So that was the prettiest looking turd in the toilet, man. As far as edge rushers, I got them fourth there too, behind the Broncos. Interior defensive line, go Chiefs. But that's it. On their defense, I like their interior defensive line. That's about it. Now on the offensive side, quarterback goes to Patrick Mahomes. I'm saying Mahomes is the best quarterback in the AFC West. That's fine. Running backs, fourth. Wide receiver, I'm saying fourth. If they had Tyreek Hill, I don't even know if they'd be... I have the Raiders as the best wide receiver core in the AFC West. They're good. Renfrow and Adams, not Jordan, Adams. Damn good. Tight end, Chiefs. Just Kelsey by himself beats everybody out. Offensive line, second. I have the Chiefs second there, so... If you're number one in like five categories, then maybe you're going, all right, you know, you got a freaking awesome defense. Then maybe you're not worried as much about Tyreek Hill. But other than Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes, give me a reason to say the Chiefs are going to dominate this division. And I don't know that's there. I tell you what, man. The value might be in betting on the Raiders. So put a few bucks in there. See what happens, because they're picked to finish last, and I don't believe that for a second.
No, it looks like the fan favorite, the casual favorite, is the Chargers, just because you look at their roster on paper.
They have a good
very,
roster.
Very talented.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Justin Herbert's got to get over that hump of getting into the playoffs as a young quarterback. You have a lot of unknowns with Denver. It's just what it is. You don't know what this system's going to look like with Hackett. The Raiders, not first time head coach, but a new head coach. And one of the best wide receivers in the league. And then you got the Chiefs, who have been dominant for so long now, without one of their best weapons, lost some players on defense. Can they keep that same energy and same intensity up in this division when everyone else around them just got better?
Now, when you look at the Chiefs last year, now they went to the AFC Championship, right? They lost to the Bengals. Tell me if I'm way off base here, because Mahomes still had amazing numbers. But were there games, especially against Cincinnati, where you kind of went, okay, the God can bleed? I mean, I felt like last year was a strange year for Mahomes. Now, he ended up putting everything together in the second half of the season. But there were times, and then you look at the playoff, in his playoff game against the Bengals, last time we saw him, you couldn't help but wonder, okay, there's Mahomes showing that he is kind of human. And that's not a knock on Mahomes, but for a guy that sharpened up his interceptions as the season progressed, now again, he threw 13 interceptions. A lot of those came early, and then he slowed down, and he became really efficient. But in that Bengals game, He's running for his dear life, though. The offensive line was bad. 26 of 39, 275, three touchdowns, two picks. His receivers were dropping passes left and right, and I remember that. It wasn't good. But there were still times where you went, all right, Mahomes is trying to make things happen here. He's still doing Mahomesy things. But I think there were a handful of times last year where you go, this isn't the greatest version of Patrick Mahomes. And now you take Tyreek Hill out of that? I'm just very curious to see how they respond.
Yeah, I remember they went, 3-4 in the first seven games of the season last year?
Yeah.
Obviously, it's last year. Things have changed. But there was a conversation going around that first 2 months where, are the Chiefs really that good? Or are Patrick Mahomes and this team as dominant as they were the past 2 years? And then they rattled off 8 straight wins.
And then we kind of shut up for that. And then we saw the Bills game where it felt like the Chiefs were going to lose like 18 times. But then, of course, they get to that overtime. That was one of the best games I've ever seen in my life, by the way.
Insane.
It was just...
I've never seen that many points scored in such a little amount of time.
Never. I'd be curious to go back and see, like, what were the percentage chances that the Chiefs were going to win? What were the percentage chances when the Bills were going to win? Like, what that looked like. Because it had to be, like... At one point, with 13 seconds left, dude, had to be like 80-plus percent chance that the Chiefs were not going to win.
I'm looking at the win probability here on ESPN, and it starts off mostly Bills, and then the Chiefs come in, and then it's just like up and down, red and blue.
Like nobody knows what to do.
Yes.
Ah, I don't know. That last 13 seconds, though, was like, what just happened here? No idea. It was crazy. So you look at their schedule. At Arizona, home against the Chargers. This is all before the bye. At Arizona, home against the Chargers. At Indy, at Tampa Bay, home against the Raiders, home against the Bills, at San Francisco. I mean, the Arizona game, I know we want to just write them off too and say, well, they were terrible at the end of the season, and then they just kind of fizzled out. I still think it's going to be a game. That's going to be a game. Home against the Chargers? Test right there. So what do you think? What do they have, 7 games before the bye? What do you think their record is before the bye?
I think it'd be very similar
you
to
think
last
so?
Year being 3-4, 4-3 maybe. Anything worse than 3-4, you're panicking.
I think you're right. I think you could see a 3-4. Then the question will be, can you do what you did last year? Because then you come out the gates against Tennessee. The bad defense going up against Derrick Henry, is he just going to run all over you? Home against Jacksonville, at the Chargers, at the Rams. So if you're saying maybe they're 3-4 before the bye, three of their first 4 games are potential playoff teams. I know the Chargers didn't make it last year. We talked about that. And then you're at Cincy. And then you're at Denver. I mean, the schedule sets up where it's tough in the beginning for KC. But it doesn't really round out like the Broncos does. The Broncos is easy to start the season. This is why we are panicking if they're bad at the beginning. Then it gets really tough.
When they finish out at the or home against the Broncos and then at the Raiders in Week 18, which could decide the division because the Chargers and Broncos play Week 18.
That's a crazy schedule for the Chiefs, man. This is why I'm kind of like, maybe they finish at the bottom. And I don't think it's a hot take. I really don't. 12:42 the time. Let's jump out and get the latest on the local Sports Flash.
Hey, everybody, this is former CSU running back Kyle Bell, and you are listening to my main man, Brady Hull, on The Hull Show. Do not turn your dial. Keep it right here.
I will say, the Sunday slate of games is going to be fun when the NFL season starts. Vegas and Los Angeles Chargers. A little rematch from that weird thing that happened last year. The decision for Staley to call a timeout, and then the Raiders are like, all right, let's go win the game. They both could have been in the playoffs last year. And then they're at Kansas City. So the Chargers start their season home against Las Vegas at Kansas City. Tough start for them, too. But then they get Jacksonville, Houston, and Cleveland right in a row. Then Denver and Seattle. So it's not like I could see the Chargers beating the Raiders. First game, I could see that. You know, Raiders got a newness factor, maybe. Probably lose to Kansas City, so you're 1-1 2-1, 3-1, 4-1. 4-1 by the time you face Denver, and they're home against Denver, and I have them losing that game. I have the Broncos losing that game. So the Chargers could be 6-1, because then Seattle's next. Chargers could be 6-1, 5-2, maybe, by the time we hit the bye week. So the Chargers, that Broncos game early on is going to be significant in the standings Monday Night Football on October 17th. Whew. Oh, man.
Just imagining this, like, 100-meter dash, and these four teams are lined up. Chargers might just get a good head start, and it's just going to be a back-and-forth race the entire season. This will be the most intriguing divisional race of all time.
No doubt.
Season, for sure.
This is the big one, though. Like, for me, the best on paper the AFC West has ever looked. I mean, look at the Raiders, though. They're getting counted out as being last in this division by a lot of people. Not the Hooligans, apparently. It's the Broncos. You in your own state are counting the Broncos out. But they got, like, great pass rushers, the Raiders do. And Crosby and Chandler Jones. Good D tackles, too. Like, their defensive line's going to be tough. So the Raiders go, obviously, to Los Angeles Chargers first game. Home against the Cardinals. At Tennessee, and then home against the Broncos, and at Kansas City. So their start is tough, too. They could be out the gates hurting pretty bad. So I guess, like I said, maybe the smart money is to take the Raiders if you small amount, you know, low risk, high reward. But you have to look at the beginning of the schedule for them. I think the Chargers game is going to be obviously key because you know you have Arizona at Tennessee, home against the Broncos at Kansas City. Then it rounds out at Saints, at Jags, home against the Colts. They all kind of have, like, I think everybody, like the Raiders and Chargers schedule kind of reminds me of the same. Couple of tough matchups, not ridiculous. Chargers start is tough. The Broncos is the opposite of the Chiefs, Chiefs, I should say. That's why I like the Broncos in this thing, man. I think the Broncos are going to have momentum. They're going to know a lot about their team. Maybe they're going to win a lot of ugly games before the bye week. And then by the time the bye week's over, while winning games, they're going to be in Russell Wilson form, in Let's Ride Denver form, by the time the bye week is over for Denver.
One little part of their schedule I'm looking at here is they have home against the Chargers on December 4th. Then they have four stretch of games where it's not a divisional game, two AFC teams in there, and then you finish out with Kansas City. So that little month of games that they're not playing in the division, they're going to be on the outside looking in, wondering what everyone else is doing.
Yeah, I do have that December stretch less than favorable for Denver. Like, I have them, if they win the division, I have them squeaking it out early, basically. They're doing their work early. I do think they win the final game of the season against the Los Angeles Chargers, January 8th. I think that might be the game. Wouldn't that be something? That final game comes down to who's winning the division. And I think Denver wins. Because, like, the Arizona game scares me. Even though it's Arizona, I do get it. I just worry about it. At Los Angeles Chargers or Rams on Christmas Day, and then you're at Kansas City. That's a stretch, dude. Because at Baltimore, we all know Baltimore is the greatest, most electrifying quarterback in the history of the world.
The most electrifying man in all of entertainment.
Lamar Jackson. So, I mean, I'm just very worried about that game.
I think playing the Chiefs twice in 4 weeks, that's tough.
Yeah, it is. I think the Broncos break the losing streak to the Chiefs this year, though. They do it at home. I don't think they can do it at Arrowhead on January 1st. On New Year's Day. Arrowhead's going to be nuts. That play's going to be tough to play.
Man, I just can't wait.
Oh, I'm so ready. 12:51 the time. We'll wrap up this hour. We're going to get to today in the NFL to start the 1 o'clock hour. Brian Howell of CU's Buff Zone will join me. And are we freaked out about Colorado Buffaloes? Tanner was saying they're underdogs in like every game but one. So how are we feeling about this Buffs team? Also more in the AFC West and just a lot. Action-packed stuff. How about this one, Angel? How has Bill Schmidt stacked up to, let's just for fun, Joe Sakic, Calvin Booth already and George Payton. I mean, Calvin Booth had, what, 3 months on the job, and he's already better than Bill Schmidt. We'll talk about it next. It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy on Northern Colorado's Voice 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Sunday and Monday Night Football are on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Joel Cantalamessa from RamNation.com. You're listening to The Hull Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Is it weird, like, we're having preseason this weekend, and then next weekend... We don't have any. When's the first regular season game?
Yeah, so it's last preseason game this week, and then everyone gets 2 weeks off. So next weekend, it'll just be college football.
Is that normal? Or am I just...
Usually the NFL starts, they give college football their first week, and then they start up that next Thursday.
Okay, so this is, if we would have had the fourth week. So they didn't move things and condense the schedule. They just removed the fourth preseason game, and it's just not there. So normally weekend would have been reserved for... the final preseason game, but instead the NFL. Okay, that's it. Just seems weird to me. Like, I get it. Every year is a brand new year, but I forget things rather easily. So after we go a year, you know, I'm like, was that how it always was? You know, do we always have that time in between? Because it is going to be after we get done with this weekend. It was almost as long, like training camp started for 2 weeks and then you got the preseason. That's almost as long of a delay in between for start of camp to preseason, end of preseason to the regular season game.
Yeah, definitely interesting, but
they're killing us.
Everything.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so hungry for football, for real football. Like, that Wyoming-Illinois game is just like, I'm salivating at that.
I'm looking at the Nebraska-Northwestern game in Dublin. That's at like 10:30.
Yeah, that's right.
Have some breakfast and some football.
How many games do we have that are interesting to me? Okay, we got a break here, but I'm going to look at that during the break. Any big things? Not a lot of big ones, but yeah, there's something. It's got venom. We'll be excited about it. Second hour coming up next today in the National Football League. It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy. In my newest gear.